Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is TPU Radio, and if you're joining us for the first time, I am your host, Jason Easley. Normally on this program, we'll start out with our theme song, which is the up-tempo Yankee Doodle Dandy, and we'll talk politics. And we're not Meet the Press. We know that. We're just three guys talking about politics. It's not life or death, except in when you're talking about the Iraq War. Tonight is a little different. Tonight we really are talking about life and death. We're talking about a life of a man who was revered in his profession, who had a sterling reputation as a husband and father, a man who, over the past weekend, killed his wife and child, of course, and then killed himself. Of course, I'm speaking about Chris Benoit. I'm assuming we have many new listeners this evening, and if any of you want to join us, you can instant message us on America on AIM at CAPJ71. If you want to call in, our telephone number is 718-664-6734. Let me get right to our guests for the evening. Some of them, if you're longtime listeners, you will, of course, know. Let me bring in George first. Hi, George.
How are you?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
Well, it's very fittingly very gloomy weather out, you know, over here in New York City. And,
yeah, we have some showers and thunderstorms moving through, which just as a note to you,
we
do have some bad weather moving through my area. So if I happen to vanish on the program, keep talking, I'll be right back. Because I'm just waiting for a power outage. I believe right here we have Ryan Latimer.
We sure do.
Is that you, Ryan?
That'd be me.
Hi, Ryan. How are you tonight?
Hey. Well, you know, I love being on the show, but I just wish I could be on here under different circumstances. But
yeah, that's exactly it. I was really conflicted about even doing this show. Right now, I'm going to bring in our featured guest for the first time ever on the program, the man who I think is probably the best wrestling writer on the planet. Of course, I'm speaking about the formermania.com political guru, Larry Zonka. Larry?
How we doing?
As you can tell, it's pretty much of a somber mood around here.
Yeah, I can hear that. Mine's mostly out of lack of sleep, but I echo the sentiments.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty fun program to be on, to be honest. We try to have a good time, but this past week I think has been draining for everyone, for fans of wrestling, for fans of Chris Benoit, also for the people that write at a place that specializes basically in wrestling.
It's
not been easy. I mean, you've probably had it toughest of all as far as the writers go.
Yeah, sure. It's been one of those weeks, man. You get feedback mail and such, and you know, a situation like this, I tend not to take things to heart too much because you know people are rather emotional around this time, and you know it's pretty much been two schools of thought in the inbox this week. It's either thank you for your coverage and doing your job, you know that's what you're there for, and we appreciate it, or you need to die along with your family for writing about it.
Yes, I know the second side of it very well.
So
I know that one tends to come in my inbox every time you know I manage to say something, the littlest thing that angers someone,
like immigration.
Does that happen to you too, George?
Whenever I stepped inside the political forums, you know, like over at. You know, like whenever I, you know, like stepped into the political zone and did a, you know, like one or two different columns, I definitely received some very polarizing emails of, you know, hatred and more hatred. So yeah.
Ryan wishes people would email him.
Hey, wait a minute.
Anyway, my mom emails. Okay, gentlemen. Let's talk about. Your personal reactions, Larry, you've written a bit about this. Your personal reaction to the tragedy that occurred, It's a multi-layered emotional reaction, I think, is what it is.
Yeah.
You're
exactly right, man. I was at one of my other jobs on Monday night. Got home a little earlier than I expected, around 9 p.m. You know, opened up the old Outlook Express, and email was just blowing up. And the first email I saw, it said, Raw's canceled. So I'm reading that while the others are loading, and it's telling me Chris Benoit and his family are found dead. And then the preceding 90 or whatever emails are popping up. All the subjects say, you know, Benoit dead, tell me this is an angle, whatnot. It's pretty sad that people actually thought that this was some kind of angle playing off the fake death of Vince. It's pretty sad that.
That's what actually troubled me about the whole Vince McMahon death angle when they started it.
I thought
they played it a little too close to reality. I know you want to be realistic in your storytelling, but...
Well, see, that was the whole problem. If they would have played this as some kind of over-the-top camp angle, him walking out of the limo the next night, like all charred up like Wile E. Coyote or something, it wouldn't have been better per se, but it would have been easier. And so they play up the death angle. They use the 10-bell salute, which, if you're a wrestling fan, you know, like, the 10-bell salute is, like, it's a serious business, man. I mean, you see these guys who are larger than life, like guys the size of Mark Henry, like, balling up and crying during a 10-bell salute because they've lost a friend of theirs. And the fact that they made light of that and then they further went on and did, like, the fake tribute videos and stuff like they did for Owen and Eddie and other people, it was just, they were trying to make it real. Some people actually thought it was real, which is sad.
And then later
in the week, Sherry Martel dies. You know, and I had written, it's like, you know, what if somebody really dies during this? You know, God forbid somebody in the company. And then Sherry Martel dies. And she gets a 3-second graphic, an hour and 10 minutes in the Raw the next week. Like, oh yeah, she's dead. You know, they couldn't be bothered.
It kind of shows you the disposable show must go on nature of the company and sort of the business as a whole.
Oh, it's the business
as
a whole, man. It is.
If Sherry Martel would have been in the business as a whole on TV every week, she would have gotten more than a 3-second graphic. I can guarantee it. You know,
like,
but since she wasn't really important anymore in the eyes of television, pay-per-view, whatever, she gets 3 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, hi, thanks, sorry you're dead, but you worked here, goodbye. Now we do have a phone call that I need to really bring on here, so let's do the phone call. Hi, you're on the show.
Yeah, hey, Jason, it's Leonard.
Hey, Leonard, I didn't recognize the number. I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
Oh, no problem.
Because I had to introduce everybody, and we had to kind of get into the topic. Leonard, what's on your mind? Because I know you're under the weather, so we won't keep you too long.
Oh, yes. Well, I just wanted to call in. I did want to say I think it's great that you're allowing the 4-1 Wrestlers to have this forum to discuss this very serious issue. And, you know, I think this is a great step for all the fans who have been affected in the healing process.
Yeah, well, Leonard, I read your column. That would be today, I believe. And I read what you had to say about it. You kind of kept some of your remarks brief. What did you think of, what's your reaction on a personal, strictly human level to what happened?
Yeah, well, as I said in my column today, the whole events have hit me pretty hard, and it's hard to kind of say why. One thing is I have, of course, been a fan of Chris Benoit for a long time, and a major reason is because he was always, as an on-air character, someone who always exemplified respect and diligence and determination and qualities that a person would want for themselves in life. And then for someone who was such an idol and a beacon to a lot of people to have his life ended the way it ended, of course, is very shocking. And something's going to take a lot of people a lot of time to get through. But as I also said today, oftentimes the way someone dies overshadows the way they lived. and I certainly don't want that to be the case here. And if any positive can come out,
I think
I would say if any positive can come out of these incidents, let it be that something like this doesn't happen again. If one person who is going through the similar situations, the similar problems that Chris Benoit was having, even though we're not 100% sure what was going on with him, if they are motivated to get help and to ask for help and avoid a similar situation, then that's a positive. And I hope something like that would be a positive from this.
Yeah, I think though, as far as overshadowing this story, because the reasoning may never be really fully known for what he did and why he did it, that's probably going to overshadow. This is one of those classic puzzler whodunits that A&E does a 60-minute special on, and MSNBC follows up with one, and this thing is going to live on for a long time. This situation, and I would not be surprised if it actually, Chris Benoit became known to the population at large as the guy who killed his family, then killed himself. And I think that's in one level, and I don't mean to sound superficial, it's a shame that a man worked hard for 22 years to get the top of his field, and what he's going to be known for is a horrible, horrible act. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think you should canonize him. I don't think you should vilify him. I mean, he truly falls somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think the area where that causes the most anger and confusion in this situation is the death of his son. I'm not sure, you know, it's typically a moral judgment, depends on each person's individual emotions, but it seems like the visceral, absolute anger and hurt coming from people about this is due to the fact that they can't find a rationale for killing a 7-year-old mentally retarded child, and that's the tough, you know what I mean?
Yes, and you know it's hard to say what his reasoning was, and I've read a couple of things of experts trying to get in his head and trying to explain. And oftentimes when something like this happens, it's because it's usually the father who does something like this, and he does so because he feels that he is acting in the best interest of his family, that they would be better off dead, that they would be better off in heaven.
Or the family was about to leave him, or there's some sort of major, as we're finding out is true, some sort of major family problem that usually precipitates this sort of action.
Yeah, as more has come out, you know, it seems like the main argument point between he and his wife was the trouble with his son, the illness that he had that seems to be a very difficult, fragile X, I believe is what it's called. And that seems to be the main point, that understanding where they were in life with that and how he was trying to deal with that, I think is going to give some answers.
Yeah, and you know, the chilling thing about this is, and this should be, as you said, sort of a lesson to other people going through problems, Chris Benoit seemed to have put a different face on. He kept a lot of things inside. Those people that they're speaking to now didn't realize there were problems. You know, and if you're having problems, everybody says it, it's cliche, the worst thing you can do is just swallow them and put on a happy face.
Yeah, everyone has said that Benoit was a very private individual. You know, he wasn't someone, and it's strange because from listening to what other wrestlers have said the other day, like Chavo Guerrero and Edge, he was the guy they went to when they had problems. But he and himself didn't find it that he could go to them when he had problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's almost, and I hate, this is why I'm going to try to avoid for the duration of the show getting into his head, attaching a rationale or a motive for what happened, because it's impossible. Anyone who does that is trying to attach a rational motive from a rational point of view to an extremely irrational set of actions. I think you know, it's I a lot of, one of the things that's upsetting, not upsetting, but that I've noticed, and like some of the fellow writers have emailed me with, is the WWE is purging Chris Benoit. They're sort of removing him and his name and his memory from their website, their mention, everything. And that's there's a divided camp on that, too. Do you honor his professional accomplishment, or do you shun him? Anyone can jump in.
Well, I had something to say about that, though, if you're having an open floor. Actually, I really can't blame the company for what they're doing at the moment, because it's I don't really think it's to shun him. It's more to, I mean, what else could they possibly do?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what I mean? They're in a place now where I can't really blame anyone for the decisions they made, because it was almost like they figuratively had a gun to their head, had to make a decision really quickly. Like, for instance, when they did the tribute show on Monday, you know, I don't fault them for that, because they go, okay, crap, you know, we go to air in, you know, X amount of minutes. What do we do? Well, how about, you know, do this? Well, I can't blame them, you know?
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't – I personally, I've read a lot of Money Quarterbacking about the tribute show, and think of it this way. If this would have turned out to just be a triple homicide, think of the criticism and scorn they would have drawn for not doing a tribute show.
Exactly.
That is a no-win situation the whole way down the line. As an executive having to make a call in, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes before you go on the air. You know, I don't fault them for that.
Yeah,
there's some other things that have been questionable that they've done to take as defensive positioning against liability, I'm assuming. But it's the company. I don't think this is one where you can blame the company. You know, this was a troubled individual, and maybe perhaps the way the company treats its employees, and no, they aren't independent contractors, they're employees, that might have contributed, but he was already obviously in a mental state that led to these actions. I mean, you can't say working for company XYZ did this to him or caused this to happen. At least that's my opinion. Okay, George, you've been really quiet over there.
I
want to get your feelings about it.
Interrupt anything there.
Well, no. I mean, it's free to jump right in. If everybody starts interrupting each other, I'll put a stop to it. George, what were your feelings on all this? What were your first reactions?
Well, my basic thing was when I found out, I was trying to show my fiance one of the different columns that was up on 411mania.com.
Mine, right?
My
column.
If I say no, will you disconnect? Are you going to disconnect or
no? Not yet.
I was actually showing her one of the earlier columns for one of our newer writers in the sports section, Mr. Jason Goodman, who is a friend of mine. Anyway,
we have a sports section.
No, was it? Oh, that was just a little cheap plug that I just thought I'd throw in. But
I know you have to work them in there every week.
Yeah,
go on.
Yeah. Anywho. I couldn't get on. I could not get on the site.
Yeah.
It was completely shut down. And I looked at my internet connection, and I have DSL, which can go in and out every now and then. I thought it was that, but all the other sites were running fine. And so I tried it again, and then when it loaded up, there were text, but there were no pictures. But on the text, in the first spot, on the Wrestling Zone spot on the main page, Chris Benoit and family found dead in Atlanta. And I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. And I had to look online to see what was going on, what sort of news this was. I want to, you know, go into Wikipedia, and they had it already updated, saying that he had left the, he had, you know, not showed up at the Vengeance pay-per-view because of a family emergency. He claimed that his wife and son were spitting up blood. And then they said that authorities found all three of them dead on Monday afternoon. And I was completely, as all of you guys were, just completely floored by this.
Now let me. I'm gonna go around the horn here, and anybody can start. Is the surprising part? What's more surprising? What happened or who was involved?
Oh, major. I think one major thing was, you know, like one major shocking point of it, you know, like was who was involved, considering that he was somebody who, as far as we knew, had no record of any, you know, like abusive habits, had no, you know, like was basically, you know, just living a very private life, but at the same time there was nothing calling attention to itself, like the way that, you know, Eddie Guerrero's past behavior did, like the way that Scott Hall's behavior did. Like the way that all the other guys, you know, like had, you know, like some sort of behavioral pattern that eventually moved their way towards their deaths. In Benoit's case, it was so sudden that, you know, like nobody, and, you know, like nobody saw it coming.
And Larry, why don't you, or whoever's going to jump in next here, Larry?
Go ahead.
Same thing.
Yeah, honestly, from everything I had known, it's the person. I mean, the act is shocking enough, but just the fact that, yeah, this is somebody that anytime you asked him about Chris Benoit, he was a respectful man. He demanded respect from you, but he gave it back to you in kind if you were respectful to him. And he was a living teacher. And, like, you know, just like, you know, like the most recent program he worked with MVP, you know, he worked with him for 5 months because the whole goal was WWE told him, this guy, we want to be a star, we need you to make him a star. And it was, you know, and he did it. And then when they were doing the draft, you know, we're going to move you to ECW because we need you to teach guys. And he did. You know, and that's just, you know, you never heard people going, hey man, that Chris Benoit was an asshole. Everybody.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, when you pictured it, long enough, we would have heard that Stone Cold Steve Austin went off half-cocked and, you know, beat another girlfriend up, wouldn't be so surprising, would it? He has a previous trend of behavior. He has some of the problems. You know what I mean? It's out there. But whenever it's somebody who's not out there as a person that's had problems, then it's even more shocking. Let's see, Ryan.
In regards to the question of is more shocking what happened or who was involved, I definitely think I could be wrong on this.
Okay, we have some static going on back there.
Who can hear me? I can hear you. Okay. Honestly, I think it was the fact that what happened as opposed to who was involved, and here's my reasoning. One of the things we slowly found out the details, and before all, the most shocking details came to light, you know, one of the theories was, well, it had to be some type of, you know, something, you know, it was an accident or the carbon monoxide or it was a homicide, someone killed all three of them. You know, don't get me wrong, that's completely tragic that his family would be killed. But then when we found out the big one, when we learned that Chris Benoit had done it, he, you know, smothered his son, he, you know, killed his wife, and then he hung himself, that was what it pushed over the edge and to the point of, How do you mentally absorb this? So that was my thinking. Not really who was involved, but what happened, because this is about the absolute worst thing that you can think of. That's just me.
Okay, Leonard?
Oh, I think it's certainly a combination of who it was and what happened. Several years ago when Chris Farley died of a drug overdose, people were shocked, they were sad, but they were like, you know, we could see that coming. When Phil Hartman, who died in a similar fashion to what happened with Chris Benoit in a murder-suicide, people were, and it was because of who he was and also the heinousness and the unexpectedness of the incident. So I certainly agree with everyone else in that notion that it is, that this was not a guy that you would have seen this coming from in a million years.
Now, Leonard, I'm going to let you start off since you kind of got the short end of the stick on that last one. If you're talking to fans, and I've heard from a few people who say, I don't know how I can watch wrestling anymore. What do you say to fans? Because let's face it, there are some fans out there that are just destroyed by this event.
I can definitely relate to that, too.
You can, George?
In a sense, because all of us, you know, like as wrestling fans, we've all gotten our share of abuse from friends, from family, from everybody who just happened to be coming in and sitting down at the worst possible time, just while you're watching Raw or SmackDown or something, and something colossally stupid is on the screen, which you know is stupid, which prompts your, you know, your people to turn to you and say, why do you watch this crap? But you always had people like Chris Benoit to fall back on and say, like, that's the reason why I'm a fan. That type of excitement, that type of passion, you know, that type of intensity, the type of matches that he was responsible for putting on, that's what, you know, like, really kind of, you know, other people can, you know, can say that, you know, like, you became a fan or you were attracted to the business because of somebody else. But people like Benoit were the reasons why you stayed a fan. And now all of a sudden we don't have that anymore. Now all of a sudden people are looking at, people look at Chris Benoit, and now all of a sudden people are, even though this is obviously, you know, like just a couple of days, you know, only a couple of days old, but people are going to be looking at him as a murderer first and a wrestler second, and that's absolutely tragic. And that's what makes me angry as a fan.
Okay, Larry, I want to know what you would say to fans right now.
Well, the thing about professional wrestling is this, and I have a little bit of a different insight than, you know, all of our writers, just for the fact that I've been more involved with wrestling, and it's this. Pro wrestling is possibly the most bipolar business on the planet, and in one aspect, one day it's the greatest thing in the world, but there is this, and this is a basic term, it is the shittiest business in the world at the same time. When I was a child, I was like a huge NWA fan. You know, Four Horsemen were cool.
So was I.
I loved the
Me
rock
too.
And roll. But I loved the Rock and Roll Express. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson were the stuff. And in 2003, I got to work a show, and the Rock and Roll Express were on the show. And I was just, yeah. And things got changed around, and I got to work a big 8-man tag. And I got to work with these guys, and I just thought, this is the greatest thing in the world. And then we all went out to Waffle House, as wrestlers tend to do, to eat. And someone said, hey, where's Ricky? And I looked outside, and he was doing a line of coke off of his car. And I sat there and thought to myself, this is the shittiest business in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think the part of it is that that the wrestling by trade, it blurs the line between character and reality, and I think fans get attached to the character more so than, let's say, in a movie or on a TV show or anywhere else, because in all those other mediums, there's a line there. Who, you know, Hugh Laurie is playing Dr. House. In wrestling, they intentionally smudge that line. And I think that makes, whenever something like this happens, that is why for people who aren't fans, it is so tough it is devastating for those who follow the industry, for those who are fans of the sport. I mean, it's a different kind of business. And there's the only thing I've ever seen close to that business is the music business. But even that doesn't have the basic suspension of reality that wrestling does, although that can be argued.
I may be making a bold statement here when they say this, but honestly, you know, people who hate, you know, going out with George and Larry said regarding people who look at the business, you know, and I've been wrestling since I was 5, and I'm 25 now. People that hate, they don't like the industry, they hate it no matter what. And they're going to hate it later. They're going to hate it before that. And you know, a lot of other people don't realize, to fail to realize is this is awful. It's a tragedy. But guess what? This sort of thing happens in all walks of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sports, business, you name it. There have been murderers in sports and all over the place. And, yeah, I could care less if people look at wrestling like a bunch of, you know, idiots on steroids and they're all drugged up and they're all these terrible people. You know what? Because they don't know anything.
And I also think, though, that mentality is why this kind of incident and tragedy is so hard for fans to deal with, because wrestling is a very small community compared to the world at large.
And it's something
and
that we that
the
we
fans are
like,
very
hold on to, like, very dearly.
The fans are very the fans are, to use a horrible word, fanatical. The fans are devoted. The fans are fanatical, and they take their criticism of their favorite hobby entertainment very, very seriously, especially from outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that then when something like this happens, you know, collectively the fans, just after they get over the shock, there's the matter of, oh, great, another horrible black eye that we're going to be known for. And that might be a really callous way of putting it. But I'm sure that there are people out there thinking that. You know what I mean?
And they were thinking that before, though.
Well, I'm sure there are fans out there thinking, oh, great, another black eye for what we love to watch.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's just one of those situations where this is probably the worst thing ever to happen to this business.
Yeah,
as far as people are involved.
Yeah.
You can go back and you can look at other scandals, other incidents, other people problems. Nothing really compares to this. It is so sensationalistic that it's going to be hanging in our media and in our collective psyche for a long time.
Well, a huge shame of this is that you've got so many media outlets that are trying to latch on to the story for their own ratings and their own sensationalism, and are trying to, one, you know, trying to connect everything back to steroids and using that as their selling point when we don't have toxicology reports in yet and we don't know what's going on.
Well, I will say, as far as the steroid thing goes, I wrote this to Larry in an email the other night. The WWE has brought the steroid thing on themselves with that moronic press release they sent out. Nobody was talking about steroids in this case before the WWE brought it up.
And they brought it up in a really stupid way, too.
In a really defensive, don't look at us for that way.
Yeah,
but
they're basically
when you do that,
steroids aren't that bad. Steroids don't do that. It was just like,
yeah.
No, they'll do this, but they won't do that. You know, like, and so basically, like, what exactly are they trying to say? Steroids are okay?
Yeah, I mean, and that's just inviting trouble if you're the business, if
yeah.
you're the WWE. I mean, that's unnecessary, and you're just inviting. As I told Larry, they invited the feds over for lunch, and they might as well schedule a couple of congressional hearings with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that they've just done that. I mean, if they wouldn't have sent out that press release, because remember, the steroids were legally prescribed. Whether he got the steroids from a doctor who he shouldn't have been getting them from, there was no tie back to the company at that point.
Right.
Yeah, I think
there was no
point.
Need to bring that up.
Yeah.
I mean,
and in
but
fact, Benoit has. I was going to say, and in fact, they have proven that when they have drug tested Benoit in the past, he acted every single time.
Where's a little static back there? What did you mind repeating yourself?
Oh yeah, I was saying, and you know, even though WWE hasn't handled this well, they have proven that every single time they drug tested Chris Benoit. The latest was back in April, though. You know, he passed it every single time, so there was no warning.
Yeah, well, that's their drug testing. Their drug testing policy is about the equivalent of Major League Baseball's.
It's well,
it's
better than baseball's.
No, it's not real good. I mean, the whole factor in their drug testing policy is they have an acceptable baseline amount of substances. It's not a zero tolerance policy. So it's an iffy. I mean, that one little phrase kind of distorts the whole process. It's a better process, though, than what they used to have, to use the Major League Baseball argument. I mean, but the steroids discussion, I don't think fits here. I don't think it fits here. I think we can have a steroids discussion, but not in this case.
Well, it just seems like, you know, like every time, you know, like wrestling becomes, you know, like makes its way into the spotlight for a tragedy. So, you know, like obviously not as incredible as this, but as, you know, as its share of tragedies and everything, you know, like they always seem to just bring up steroids. It's always just seemed to be that trump card that they always kind of, you know, keep close to their vest. Until wrestling comes up, and then they're like, ah, steroids.
Yeah, but you can make the same argument for baseball now.
Oh, yeah, well, they do
it
that.
It doesn't matter what baseball does. Everybody goes, ah, steroids.
Right.
Once you're stained with that stigma, it doesn't go away.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and especially the same way baseball and the WWE have kind of handled steroids in the same way,
mm-hmm.
and that's their problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They haven't publicly been very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different issue altogether. But I really don't think, at the end of the day, I think long-term steroid abuse might have contributed to his state of mind in some way, but his basic state of mind wasn't, you don't go on, you don't do what he did over the course of 3 days. Roid rage does not last for 3 days.
Right.
Okay?
Roid rage does not give you the idea to go and grab a couple of Bibles.
No. This was, and I think one of the most hurtful things about this is, at first I was getting emails and hearing things from people going, well, he just snapped. But as details emerge, this doesn't look like someone who snapped.
No.
Yeah, this looks very sort of methodical and brutal and vicious. And also remorseful. Don't underestimate the placement of the Bibles. There were some deep, deep problems there.
Yep.
And I think as a fan, I think it's going to be tough, honestly. And I wrote this in my column. Chris Benoit, still watched parts of SmackDown for Chris Benoit. I quit watching Monday Night Raw long ago, quit buying pay-per-views a year ago. And I'm going to start watching ECW for Chris Benoit. Because, like was pointed out, he was a throwback. I started watching wrestling in 1982 at the age of 10. Okay, I remember Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer tearing apart Georgia Championship Wrestling and Devon Erickson and the Freebirds and when the sport was actually about wrestling, not a soap opera that wrestling happens to interrupt once in a while, as in the current WWE product. So that's why I like Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit was about wrestling. And that's why this strikes an especially deep chord. You know what I mean? Because in some ways it strikes to the very heart, as was pointed out, of why you watch.
Right. So this kind of reminded me of the whole statement that Eddie Guerrero made on the Monday Night War DVD when they talked about when you know, like he and Chris and Dean and Perry and everything went over to WWF. When he said that when WCW lost them, they lost the backbone, and that was really what they were. Like they were the ones that were satisfying the wrestling fans, while the headliners with the New World Order were satisfying the storyline fans.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and the sad part is, I mean, I as I wrote to Larry probably many eons ago, I had become a big TNA fan, but over time, due to certain decisions they've made, they've caused me to enjoy the product much less. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I really lament. I'm one of those people, essentially, that wrestling really sort of died for me when WCW went away. I'm. Remember, there's the wrestling audience is about half as big as it used to be, and I'm one of those people that's sort of on that fence and then sort of went away. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like it all sort of changed for me.
I've been a kind of a. I've called myself a casual fan ever since about 2001. It was probably a combination of both kind of growing a little older and the fact that the product got so terrible. But, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying there. I'm nowhere near I was when I was younger, and even up until I was, like, 20, 21, and it just stopped being fun.
See, now I believe Larry, you're a little closer to my age.
Yeah, 30.
A tiny bit closer to my age.
30.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're a little closer. George is a little closer. Ryan is a child. Leonard, we're not sure how old you are.
I'm 28.
Oh, so you're right in the middle. I'm not a child, I'm a kid. Well, I'll tell you what, Leonard. I'm going to let you go right now because I want to kind of free up a line in case anybody else wants to call in.
Okay, yeah, understandable. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks
for coming on. And keep in mind our next movie night, Leonard.
Okay, I'll do that. Look forward to it.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, Leonard.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, now we do have an open line if anybody else wants to join us. You know, I don't know how you guys feel. Larry, do you still have the same passion for watching wrestling that you're used to?
Well, yeah, I think...
Or being that you've been in the business, do you look at it from a different eye now?
Oh, I do. I think I look at things a lot differently from other people. It's just I understand certain things, but I still also don't think they're right. And it's just like, you know, the last 2 months are a great example, and I've caught a lot of flack because I hated the whole Randy Orton concussion killer storyline, because WWE employs Chris Nowinski, who had to retire from wrestling due to post-concussion syndrome. He's written a book. He's been on Real Sports. He's like a champion for post-concussion syndrome and trying to bring it to the forefront. And the company he works for is running an angle where they have a guy giving people concussions and quote-unquote ending their career. And then they do the death of Mr. McMahon angle, and I'm just like, you know, this is a business riddled with tragedy and death. You know, drug abuse, people dying from enlarged hearts for steroids. You know, Mike Awesome commits suicide, which they think was linked to depression from post-concussion syndrome.
Yeah, you bring up a great point about post-concussion syndrome, especially now that the NFL is commissioning studies and it's coming on about how many of their former players are suffering early onset Alzheimer's and all the different illness, mental and brain injuries that come from multiple concussions. I mean, this really wasn't the time to be playing Randy Orton just giving you a concussion and ending your career.
No,
there shouldn't have been any time to do something like that. And like that was.
Well, I mean, back in a different era, back in the 80s, people fell on their heads all the time and were legally dead in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd wrap their head up, and you'd see them 2 weeks later, and they'd come stumbling in the ring and they'd beat up the bad guy. The world's changed now. You can't treat something as specific as post-concussion syndrome with that kind of almost frivolity. I mean, they treated it as sort of a light way. Now, has there ever been an angle, Larry, a storyline that offended you as a fan?
Well, the McMahon death angle was insulting to me in a lot of ways for the way they produced TV afterwards. Like I said, if they would have done something extremely campy, tongue-in-cheek, hey, we all know he's alive, yuck, 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 it would have been more palatable. But the fact is, you know, they took something, they used the 10-bell salute, and I'm just, that's something that I've unfortunately, you know, I've been a part of, and it's just, it's an emotional process, and it's, to many people, it's a sacred part of the business. And I know, I talk to people that I know around here that were absolutely insulted by it. And then to further go on and basically mimic like the Owen and Eddie memorial shows by having people cut these fake tribute pieces.
Yeah,
it really put like a really kind of sick spot in my stomach. It's like that's, you know, like I said, this is a business riddled with horrific death. I mean, what, last 10 years, almost 50 people under 50 died.
Yeah, I read 60 people on 60 people 45 or under in the last decade plus, so that's about the same ballpark number, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a rough number, but, you know, 50 to 60, but it's still, it's way too many, especially when, you know, they look at the NFL, and it's like the last 100 years, they said it's been 100 people. So you
that's the other thing. If you brought up the NFL, what if 50 or 60 NFL players had died in the last 10 years? And not backup quarterbacks, but Hall of Fame, Pro Bowl caliber players were dying.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
I mean,
This would never be tolerated.
No, it wouldn't. You're exactly right. It would never be tolerated to the fact that it has been. And I was on the Ultimate Sports Show last night with Kenny Stabler speaking to the NFL. And they had contacted me to talk about this, and Kenny Stabler asked me, he goes, do you think something like this will shed the light on this horrific problem? And I said, I said 18 months ago I thought it would have when Eddie Guerrero died.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Eddie Guerrero, you know, was possibly the most popular man on the roster at the time. If you look at the demographics, and you know, he had the Latino audience, he had the regular audience. I mean, when he was on, his segment was the highest rated segment, him and Rey Mysterio Jr. So you have somebody that popular and that dies, you know, in his hotel room, and it's on the news, and you know, Vince is on CNN, and we're gonna take care of our athletes. We're gonna institute this wellness policy.
And you know, that's what saved them from a congressional investigation.
It did.
And I'll tell you right now, that's what saved them.
Yeah, and for the first 2 months, you know, if you watch every single show like I do because I write about it, it
guys
was working.
Got smaller.
Okay, it was working because guys
yeah.
were getting smaller. Chris Masters
yeah.
was shrinking at an exponential rate. The hell, they made fun of him on TV for losing
yep.
weight. You know, Randy Orton came out when he was injured, and he looked small as hell. And then
I'm going to mention Dave Bautista really jumped out at me.
Oh,
Triple H jumped out at me from that period.
Yeah, Triple H.
All of a sudden, Triple H went from being a geeked up monster to being a little bit of a bulky dude.
Yeah, he went a little more flabby. And because, you know, he wasn't jacking up as much and gassing and cycling, he wasn't shredded. And it's just,
yeah.
But then, like, you know, a couple months into the wellness policy, you're like, I think guys are getting better. And then after Rob Van Dam and Sabu got busted for marijuana, you notice they quietly changed the policy to where they don't suspend them and take them off the road. They keep them working, but they just don't pay them. So
yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm still on TV, so I'll still get my merchandising.
By the way, but I want to mention something on this subject too. Remember when the Great Khali and Bobby Lashley pulled for elevated enzyme levels? Kids, elevated enzyme levels are a sign of human growth hormone abuse. I'm not kidding you. That is one of the main.
Well, that's one of the telltale signs, exactly. And I can tell you that from personal experience, because I mean, the reason I know is, you know, I've torn my knee up so many times. I've had like 10
yeah.
knee surgeries. And, I've been put on, you know, anabolic steroids for recovery because I tore my ACL, MCL, and PCL at one time. And, you know, I needed help. You know, doctor was like, you know, this is something you can use. And I used it. And I'll tell you one thing, though, and hell, my wife will verify this. I was a grumpy son of a bitch for about 6 months. People don't understand that. They think, oh, you have to use steroids for years to have it affect you like that. No, you don't. I was cranky all the time. I didn't feel
the irritability, the mood swings.
Yeah, and I did. I had horrendous mood swings, and I stopped because, you know, I have a child. And, you know,
yeah.
if she drops something, I don't want to yell at her for spilling a bowl of cereal. It's an accident. So
yeah,
just,
I mean,
yeah.
it's like with me, I was involved in the gym culture for a long time. I have seen just about everything, and I have taken just about everything that was legal at one time to take. Okay, so I you know, it's like whenever you hear little buzzwords like elevated liver enzymes,
yeah.
or you see somebody dramatically get bigger and they say to diet and exercise and you know they've gained 25 pounds of muscle in about a 4 to 6 month time period, it's steroids.
Yeah,
it's just obvious to people that have been around them. You know what I mean? It's like not even anything has to be spoken about.
Yeah, and
you just mention somebody's name and everyone goes, oh yeah, you know. But I mean, for what kind of stuns me is every time I had written about steroids, like I wrote about since Eddie Guerrero died, that it wouldn't surprise me if his death was steroid related, and I got so much hate mail in a half a day. I got dozens and dozens and dozens of hate mail emails. And,
well,
I'll tell you what, too.
The thing is, people don't realize that, like, they look at these guys on TV and they'll go, well, like, Shane Helms is a great example. They'll be like, Shane Helms doesn't take steroids. He's not jacked up. But when they did the investigation for that steroid place, they found out his name was on the list. And he
Shane Helms gained about 20 to 25 pounds of bulk on his body. And by body structure, he isn't that kind of, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Metabolism and body structure, he's not going to gain 20 to 25 pounds.
I totally agree.
He's a cruiserweight.
Yeah, but the normal wrestling fan is going to look at Shane Helms and go, well, he doesn't take steroids.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's a good example of somebody who's jacked himself up in the last year, Sean Devari, who recently came back to Raw.
Yeah.
That dude, every time I write about him, I refer to him as Davari's new body because he looks like he ate Muhammad Hassan. That dude is like 200 pounds, and he's like shredded with 100 pounds of muscle. And
yeah.
It's like, that's just not natural.
I've always found Rey Mysterio's weight gain really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Dude, go back and go look at Rey in 1996 when he looked like
a
child.
Yeah, go back and put in the Rey Mysterio DVD and look at his WCW stuff. Look at his Mexico stuff. The guy's 140, 150 pounds. But now when he's WWE champion, he's weighing at 197.
Yeah. Well, the first
he didn't hit a growth spurt.
The first time he really jumped was when he had the one major knee injury, and he came back to face Jericho, and it's on his DVD. And he's, like, bronze tanned and totally jacked. Not to the point that he was when he debuted for the Fed, but he was much bigger. He had put on about 15, 20 pounds at that point. And, yeah, he seriously probably put on, when he debuted in the Fed, I'd say he put on close to 40 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, sadly, due to the mentality and culture of that organization and almost any other organization, that got him to the main event probably.
Oh, that's
being a little bigger got him to the main event.
Well, look at Vengeance. Here's a good example, okay? WWE has always been the big man's game. Bigger is better, okay? Now, they can trifle, you know, Umaga and Kali out there, and people will react to them because they're big guys. And not even that Umaga's ripped, but he's just a big guy. So people are going to react to him. Chavo Guerrero Jr. and Jimmy Wang Yang come out for their match. And there's no crowd reaction for the entrance, nothing for the match, because everybody's going, hey, there's a couple small guys. We don't need to pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and we could also go into the fact that they've booked the title like hell for the past 7 years, but that's besides the point, since they're small guys. When London and Kendrick debuted on Raw, everybody was like, who are these small guys?
Yeah, that's just the mentality that WWE has set in their fans' minds.
It is.
Bigger is better.
It really is.
Yeah, it's really like the way that they're booked. You know, like they're looking at the cruiserweight open that was done at WrestleMania 20. They gave that what, 5-6 minutes?
Besides this back to Chris Benoit, gentlemen, people will wonder why Chris Benoit took steroids. In the world of World Wrestling Entertainment, if he didn't take steroids, he would be jobbing every night in the mid card somewhere.
Or he wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
It was very much like his idol, the Dynamite Kid. Like what he said in his book, Pure Dynamite, how he was, you know, constantly using steroids and everything and putting on much more muscle than his body was supposed to handle.
Exactly.
You know, by the way, those Triple H quad tears, as we've learned from Barry Bonds and others, when muscle starts tearing away from the bone... You know, that's a pretty good sign that you're juicing pretty hard and you're a little too big for your skeleton structure.
Well, look at Dave Batista. Dave Batista has had 3 bicep tears.
Yeah.
He's lucky he's still wrestling. If he has another one, he's probably done, because you go back to Del Welks, who was the Patriot in the Global and WCW and the short WWF run. That's why he retired, because he was popping 50 pills a day because his arm was, like, torn apart. And then he had a 3rd bicep tear, and his doctor said, "We can't do anything for you, man."
Yeah. Now the reason why we got into this discussion a little bit was simply because steroids were brought up with Benoit, and I personally think steroids are horrible and evil, and I hate baseball for the way they've handled steroids. And that's one of the things I really do hate about the WWE, especially, is their wink and nudge to steroids, but. People who don't watch wrestling are going to wonder, well, why was he doing steroids? Or he just wanted to get bigger and be the best. There is an inherent pressure in that industry to be bigger.
Especially when the man who is preaching that bigger is better is in a lot of people's mind the only man running the show.
Yep. Yeah, he's a juicer.
Just look at Vince.
He's a juicer. Well, when the chairman, when the head of the company is juicing,
yeah.
What
yeah.
message does that send to all the
well,
employees?
Well, he has said there's nothing that he wouldn't do himself. There you go.
Let me break in. Let me say this too, and it's just not a WWE problem. Because let me tell you something.
No,
this is going to sound really sad, but I know guys that wrestle pretty much 2 days a week, and they work like in a freaking grocery store, but they feel like they have to juice. These are guys working for 70 people that have no chance of ever getting to Ring of Honor or TNA, let alone the quote-unquote big show, the WWE.
Yeah.
They're working bagging groceries and stocking milk and soup, and they're using all their money to buy, you know, raw meat and roids because they want to look jacked for the 70 people that show up. So it's
a business-wide
epidemic. It's
horrible. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do you want to ask a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not, I'm looking back at all this and just considering the conversation we've had, and I'm not being a smart aleck when I ask this, asking Jim a question, just kind of reflecting. But, you know, we just had this, you know, 20 minutes or so, we were talking about steroids and how everyone's doing steroids and no one cares, the WWE doesn't care. But, you know, and just before that, we were talking about how, you know, people shouldn't jump to conclusions about how Benoit and the steroids was the reason he did it. You know, Do you guys think, I mean, just based on the conversation we just had, that steroids did have a role in that?
I'll say this. I think there is a small possibility because of the fact that it's proven that long-term steroid use can lead to depression issues,
mm-hmm.
severe depression.
Yeah. And, Larry, you know very well, and everybody, and George and Ryan know too, wrestlers live a very... pill popping. He was probably not only if he was taking steroids at that time, there would be a long term use of anabolics, painkillers, and whatever else he needed so he could work.
So the central
there might have been all kinds of the cocktail of drugs that he'd used at one time or another that contributed to his mental state long term. So I mean, yeah, I'm not defending steroids, but I'm saying that. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past steroids, but you can't really rule it out either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be the WWE and say, oh, steroids don't do that. Because, to be honest, the research is sort of still being done.
Right.
Yeah. We're not real sure yet. I mean, the reality here is if you guys, what do you guys take away from what happened with Chris Benoit? The question I really wanted to wrap up with and ask each of you, I'll start with Ryan since he's been the quiet one for the last few minutes. Will this impact the way you watch Chris Benoit wrestle? When you go back and look at DVDs or whatever.
Yeah, I've been actually waiting to say this. I knew it was going to be at the end of the show, but I might be making a really bold statement here, or maybe even out of hand, but, you know, guys, no, it is not, and here's why. You know, when I see Chris Benoit on my TV, or, you know, open my VCR, my DVD, and I look back at his matches, and I'm not giving him a free pass here because of this, he's someone I looked up to. He wasn't a hero to me. He was an entertainer that I liked. But so bear in mind that even though that's true, I'm not giving him a free pass just because I felt I knew him. But people, Chris Benoit, he was sick, okay? He was ill. He had a problem. He did not get that problem corrected. And, you know, you can call it whatever you want, but this guy was beyond, based on what he did. You do not kill your wife and smother your son unless you are beyond irrational, okay?
Okay,
George.
Go ahead.
We're running out of time, Ryan. Sorry.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Myself, you know, like it's going to be a while before I can really, you know, kind of sit back and watch one of his, one of his matches again. I'm not throwing away my, you know, like my Hard Knocks DVD, and I know that, you know, like that I'm still going to eventually enjoy his matches, but at the same time. It's very difficult for me, especially considering how almost dirty I felt as soon as the tribute ended on Monday, and then all of a sudden, you know, like the news came out about the double murder suicide. It was basically, it was almost like a kick to the groin almost, because it was basically like, hey, you know, this person that you've been, you know, like, you know, really, you know, real, you know, giving so much praise for the past 3 hours. Oh, by the way, he was a murderer. And it just felt
Larry,
like...
I'm sorry, yeah. George, we're running out of time. Larry.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I unfortunately, when I watch wrestling, I think of it way too much.
You detach yourself already.
So it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm not throwing my DVD away either. I'd like to think that down the road I'm going to pop it in and think back to the good times and, you know.
By the way, Larry, great Western Pennsylvania accent.
Yeah, I try, man. It's been good talking to you.
Yeah. I knew right away as soon as you spoke. I'm like, that's one of my boys. So, guys, that about wraps up the show. I'd like to thank everybody for being on. I'm really sorry we couldn't fit more people on the show tonight. Our discussion went a little long. We kind of got wrapped up. Larry, thanks for coming on. In the future, we're going to do a steroid-related show. If you want to come back for that, we'd love to have you. George?
Yes.
You know the usual. I'll see you Sunday. Ryan, thanks for coming on as usual. You are a weekday guy.
All right, appreciate it.
That does it. I will talk to everybody later. I'll see you guys Sunday at 6:30. Thanks, everybody, and good night.
Good night. Bye.